Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. You are listening to episode 47, The Abduction of Jerilee Underwood. Please proceed with caution while listening to this episode. This episode will contain depictions of violence against a child. Listener discretion is advised. It is a rainy summer day on Tuesday, June 29th, 1993. 11-year-old Jerilee Underwood had just returned home from an orthodontist appointment. As soon as she got into her house, she ran upstairs to her bedroom and she started wrapping and rolling her newspapers. Jerilee and her older brother, Jamin, he was 12 years old, they decided that they wanted to become a part of the Idaho State Journal paper route. These two young entrepreneurs were so excited about making their own money that summer, and Jerilee took that job completely seriously. She was so good at her job that she even won a trip to Yellowstone National Park from the Idaho Journal. They had a contest going on, and whoever could enroll the most members in a few months would win a trip, and Jerilee won. That came as no surprise to Jerilee's mother, because she says that her daughter was always happy, always smiling, always full of sunshine, and the neighbors just adored her. The neighbors in this tiny town of Pocatello, Idaho, actually adored the entire Underwood family. Jeff and Joyce Underwood were the parents to six adorable children. So we have Jamin, age 12, Jerilee, age 11, Jennifer, age 9, Janice, age 7, Jessica, age 5, and Justin, age 2. Oh my goodness gracious. That is a handful, and that is why Joyce was so thankful that she had Jerilee to help her out. Jerilee was a wonderful big sister to her siblings. Jerilee was born 5 weeks early. When she was born, she only weighed 4 pounds and 12 ounces. She ended up spending about 10 days in the hospital. She thrived while growing up. She loved reading, being outdoors, playing with her friends, and most of all, she loved her family and her faith. The sun is starting to shine on this summer evening in 1993. The Underwood family is just finishing up dinner, and Jerilee decides that she needs to now go out on her paper route and finish collecting that week's money. So she tells her mother that she's going to ride her bike, but the bike was broken. Her wheel was broken. And so Joyce says, okay, hold on, let me go fix your bike for you. I'll let you know when I'm finished. So Joyce goes into the garage and she starts fixing the wheel. She finally gets it fixed and she goes to tell Jerilee that her bike is ready to go, but the kids tell her that Jerilee couldn't wait any longer and she already left on foot. Joyce and Jeff had taught Jerilee and Jamin all about safety, how to be safe in the neighborhood, and how to get home safely. So there was really no concern at this point from the family. Joyce and Jeff decided to use up the last few hours of daylight on this beautiful summer night and do some yard work. So they weren't able to hear the phone ringing. It was at this moment that Joyce goes inside the house and hears the phone ringing, and it is a neighbor trying to contact them. An elderly neighbor of the Underwoods calls their home and tells them that Jerilee was just at her house collecting the money for her newspapers. She says that as she was standing in her kitchen after Jerilee left, she looked out her window and saw a man next to a car talking to Jerilee. It seemed as though Jerilee knew the man. She didn't seem frightened. She didn't seem scared. The older woman said that she saw Jerilee look down, and that is when the man grabbed her and threw her into his vehicle. This neighbor was elderly and could not get outside quick enough to help Jerilee. She got a description of the car. She says that the car was a cream color and it seemed similar to an Oldsmobile. It was clean, in good condition, with possibly a dark-colored vinyl roof and an unknown license plate. The neighbor describes the male as white, 5'7 to 5'8, and wearing a plaid shirt and a hat. This neighbor lived a few blocks over on Kirtwood Place. Joyce and Jeff immediately get over to that woman's house. Soon, the Pocatello Police Department would be called and they would report the abduction of Jerilee Underwood. Jeff and neighbors would end up searching the neighborhood all night, but Joyce says that she couldn't bear to do it. She stayed home just praying and hoping that Jerilee was just going to come running through that door at any minute, talking about how many tips she made that night. Door-to-door searches immediately begin that night, and a special meeting is held at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints building. This is the church that Jerilee attended every Sunday with her family. Jerilee's father, Jeff, describes that very first night as one of the hardest nights of his life. He says that he and Joyce just held each other and cried. It is now June 30th, 1993. Jerilee has been missing for one day. The case is now going to be assigned to Scott Shaw. He was a detective sergeant in 1993 of the Pocatello Police Department. The reason that Scott Shaw was assigned to this case was that he was one of the only officers that was educated in specialized training in violent crimes. Police are now going to have to rule out the family, and they're also going to have to rule out the fact that Jerilee could have been a runaway or she could have had a boyfriend. And of course, her parents laugh at this idea. Jerilee was 11 years old. She did not have a boyfriend. She had no discipline issues. She was a great student. So the police are going to now rule that out and focus on the fact that Jerilee was abducted by a stranger. On June 30th, 1993, police still believe they are looking for a live person. Scott Shaw wants to now push the media attention. He believes if they can get this story out to as many media outlets as possible, that somebody has to come forward with some information. The police also need to get the community involved as much as they can because although Pocatello had trained police officers, they only had about 80 of them. And at this point, they're going to need three times as many to find this little girl. They know they have to act fast, and they decide that since they already know what the vehicle looks like, they're going to call a community meeting at the church. And as each person arrives at the church in the parking lot, police are paying immediate attention to every single vehicle that comes in. Because it is very possible that whoever abducted Jerilee is going to show up to this meeting tonight. Because we all know that a narcissistic serial killer is going to love to watch the family and friends grieve. But the police did not find any suspects that night at the church gathering. The FBI is going to put together a profile of the suspect. They are going to say that this suspect is probably going to be the type of person that plans his moves, plans his steps, and he was an organized offender. But Detective Scott Shaw does not agree with them. He says that because this abduction took place in broad daylight, right in front of neighbors, on a busy street, that this person had to be somebody that Jerilee did not know at all, and somebody that just did it at the spur of the moment. Detective Shaw had also worked a case previously in November of 1992, and this is when a young lady was abducted and she was taken from a restaurant by a stranger and then taken into the outskirts of town and sexually assaulted. But the suspect let this young lady go. The teenager was actually able to give a detailed description to police, and Detective Shaw saw similarities in between these two cases. It is now Friday, July 2nd, 1993. Jerry Lee has been missing for 3 days. This is when police get a call from a person. She says that she knows a relative that they need to start looking at closer. She says that her relative looked exactly like this sketch that was drawn from the previous victim. She also says that her relative has a vehicle that is very similar to the one that the police are describing. Her relative also had friends who lived in Geralee's neighborhood. James Jimmy Wood was born on December 9th, 1947. According to an article on grunge.com, by the time James Wood was only 2 years old, his father was incarcerated in a federal prison, and his mother Hazel had to move her and her son to Pocatello, Idaho. James began rebelling immediately at a young age. By the time he was 9, he reportedly began having sexual violent fantasies. James' mother remarried, and by the time he was 8 years old, he tragically lost his mother in a workplace fire. At this point, he was now in the custody of his stepfather, who he reports physically, psychologically, and sexually abused him. During his teen years, James became a ward of the state and committed such crimes as stealing cars, setting fires, and even pulling a knife on a corrections officer while incarcerated. According to an article by Jennifer Dauschman, the Radford University Department of Psychology reports that James actually committed his first rape at the age of 22. Police are now on to James Jimmy Wood, and they find out that he is staying with relatives. He and the relative went on a camping trip, so this is when police decide to go to the home and see if the vehicle matches the one they've been searching for. Witnesses are shown the vehicle that the police find in the driveway, but none of the witnesses can say for sure that that is the vehicle they saw. Luckily for police, on Monday, July 5th, 1993, another witness comes into the police department and tells them that he has some very important info to report about James Wood. He says that he's actually letting James stay in his basement right now because James had nowhere to go. The witness says that on the night of June 29th, James did not come home. He said that he knew that James was a convicted felon, that he owned a handgun, and that he had served time in prison. He also tells police that the clothes that James was wearing the night of June 29th just disappeared. He never saw James wear those clothes again, and also, James shaved his mustache. James Wood is now the primary suspect in the abduction of Jerry Lee Underwood. Police will now go throughout the neighborhood and interview all of the neighbors near the house where Jerry Lee was abducted. The police find a house where James was hanging out with his friends. These friends tell the police that James left the house around the same time that Jerry Lee was taken. These friends say that James told them, "Hey, I'm gonna go buy some beer and I'll be right back." But James never came back. It is Tuesday, July 6th, 1993. Jerry Lee has been missing for 7 days at this point, and police are going to arrest James Wood for first-degree kidnapping. As police bring James Wood into the police department for an interrogation, Detective Scott Shaw decides that he wants to be the only one in the room with James. He says this is to develop a sort of rapport with James so that he will speak and will tell them exactly what they need to know. And James does speak. James tells the officer that he drove Jerry Lee to the Utah border. They spent the night in the car. He says that he attempted to sexually assault her, but that Jerry Lee chastised him. He says that Jerry Lee told him to knock it off, and so he did. That's what he says. James says that after the two woke up in the vehicle the next morning, he drove her outside of town. Now, Detective Shaw isn't going to believe any of this bullshit. After a few hours, Wood tells Detective Shaw, "There's more. I lied." He says that he drove Geralee back to Pocatello. Then he took her to Idaho Falls. He told Geralee that she could go to the bathroom and he led her to some bushes. As he walked up behind her as she was in the bushes, he shot her in the back of the head. He then tells Detective Shaw that after he shot Geralee in the back of the head, he dismembered her body right there in the bushes and threw her remains into the Snake River. Police now have to deliver the news to the Underwood family. Joyce Underwood would say that it was hard to hear how her daughter was killed, but it was easier than never knowing, and one of the hardest days they had to ever experience was telling Geralee's siblings that they would never see their sister again. Because of Geralee's gruesome death, the family were not ever able to view her remains. And Joyce Underwood says that she would oftentimes wonder if it was really her daughter. But dental records did identify the remains as Geralee Underwood. The Idaho Police Department would now have to take over as this was now their crime scene. They brought in a dive team, and police did find remnants of blood in the grass where James Wood showed them he took Geralee. Some of the remains were found a week later, and then city workers found Geralee's torso near a power plant. The Underwood family did not go to the hearings because they were told not to. They were told that they wouldn't be able to handle the photos of the gruesome death that Geralee experienced. James Wood was charged with first-degree murder, and Bannock County prosecutors are now going to seek the death penalty. According to an article in EastIdahoNews.com, investigators learn that James Wood had a 30-year trail of crime. This is covering at least six states, and this is murder, attempted murder, and rape. His crimes included, in the late 60s, he cut the throats of two women and raped one of those women, but they both survived. He also came up behind a woman at a gas station, grabbed her, raped her, and shot her. In 1992, he stole his wife's credit card and handgun, and he molested his 14-year-old stepdaughter. According to East Idaho News, the detectives were able to tie James Wood to a rape that had been reported earlier outside of a Pizza Hut in Pocatello. The young lady was abducted, and after the sexual assault, she told officers that Wood pointed a gun at her, but it misfired. He then said to her, "It's your lucky day," and he let her go. Investigators would find so many trails of crime committed by James Wood. Here's a list of some of them. First-degree murder, two counts of rape, aggravated assault, two counts crime against nature, three counts kidnapping, attempted robbery. Many states no longer use the term crime against nature. A crime against nature is a felony offense that criminalizes certain sexual acts, including masturbation, sodomy, and bestiality, or sexual offenses that are considered unnatural or contrary to the order of nature. James Wood would plead guilty to the murder of Geralee Underwood. He would be sentenced to death. James Wood was to die by lethal injection. But on February 1st, 2004, after complaining about breathing problems earlier that day, James Wood would die of natural causes. The Underwood spoke to the East Idaho News, and Jeff Underwood said, "The family never spoke to James Wood, and he never tried to reach out to them. They said that they had nothing to say to him anyway, and both Jeff and Joyce started attending counseling sessions. This is a quote that Jeff said to the Idaho News. "There was one session that was especially therapeutic for me. We made a scarecrow replica of James Wood to get my anger out. Then I actually did exactly what he did to Jerry Lee. I went through the whole process, and it was really helpful to get rid of the anger and not continue to harbor it." Jeff was also quoted as saying, "It was too much to take in. So I said a prayer to Heavenly Father and asked if he would please just take Wood's life so that it could be over and done with." 2 weeks later is when the Underwoods got the call that James Wood died in prison. I could have very well made this episode about James Wood, considering all of the crimes he had committed. Instead, I decided it's better to focus on Jerry Lee and focus on her family's strength. Jerry Lee's mom said that she always taught everyone around her to be kind and honest. Jerry Lee never let her own problems prevent her from helping someone else. Jerry Lee's younger sister, Janice, told her mother one day that she had a vision of Jerry Lee. She said, "I see Jerry Lee singing at church, and she is happy." Joyce Underwood said, "I've learned there are a lot of things worse than death. If we didn't think we'd see Jerry Lee again, it'd be very difficult. But I know we will be together one day." Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Residue. I appreciate all of you so very much. Residue is created, hosted, written, researched, and edited by me, Chrissy Champagne. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave Residue a 5-star review on any of your preferred listening platforms. And if reviews ain't your thing, then maybe you could just share the episodes with a friend, or two, or three. We are coming up soon on episode 50, and I wanted to get your opinions on whether or not we should start the Patreon soon. Sooner than later. If you would all love to be a part of a Residue Patreon where there will be a champagne room, you can get a hold of me on Instagram and TikTok at Residue Podcast, Facebook, Residue, a true crime podcast, and as always, stay safe and stay paranoid.